Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. Last night, President Obama announced that he plans to implement an immigration reform package by executive order. The president says the order could affect as many as 5 million people who have entered this country illegally and provide them with legal work permits. Many of these people are the parents of children who are American citizens. This decision has sparked a furious debate in Congress. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He says the president's plan is blatantly unconstitutional.
It is important for the Congress to stand up and resist its complete erosion of its powers, but more significantly, the powers of the American people. If these actions are taken, we will have effectively opened the borders of America.
Does the president have the authority to put his plan into place? And how will this development affect the relationship between Republicans and Democrats in Congress? Could it make a bad situation even worse? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Senator Patrick Leahy. Senator, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's good to be with you. And the my sister Mary tells me it's getting a tad chilly in Vermont.
Well, that's definitely the truth. No question about that, Senator. And Senator Leahy does join us from the Senate Recording Studio in Washington, D.C., and you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. What do you think of the president's immigration reform plan? Does it make sense? Is it an overreach of executive power? Should securing the border also be part of the plan? Do government surveillance programs need to be reined in, or are they necessary to deal with the threat of terrorists around the world? Your thoughts, an opportunity to talk to Senator Patrick Leahy, 1-800-639-2211, or you can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. So, Senator, let's talk about this immigration reform plan. Senator Sessions says the president does not have the authority to implement this immigration reform policy. Is Senator Sessions wrong?
Of course he's wrong, and I'm surprised he could say it with a straight face. He had no objection when President Reagan did sweeping executive orders like this. He had no objection when President George H.W. Bush did even larger sweeping executive orders. I think Senator Sessions just does not want any – he's one of the few people who actually voted against the bipartisan immigration bill that passed the U.S. Senate. I remember when we went through something like 140 amendments in a committee. I kept the committee in there till 10 or 11 o'clock a lot of nights when we did that. I remember Senator Sessions bringing up one of his anti-immigration amendments. He talked for 45 minutes about it, and all he got was his own vote. Even the most conservative members, Republican members, wouldn't vote with him. So he's not the best authority. The best authority is to look at what the Office of Legal Counsel has said and what they've said during President Reagan's term, during President Eisenhower's term, during President Bush's term. And all of these actions taken by the president are within his authority. Now, there's a lot more actions the president would like to take, but can't under his authority. And I'll tell you a little bit about this. Two nights ago, the president brought in a small group of us to have dinner with him and talk about it. We talked, and I was one of the ones there. And we all agreed there were a lot more things we'd like him to do, but he doesn't have the legal authority to do it. He's only going to do those things he has the legal authority. But you know what is really shows the blatant partisan politics of this? The United States Senate passed the immigration bill that came out of my committee by a 2-to-1 margin over 500 days ago. It's been sitting on the Republican Speaker of the House, Speaker Boehner's desk. He refuses to bring it up for a vote in the House, even though he knows it would pass. Now, if he passed that bill, the president would sign it, and it would override everything the president is doing. So if they really don't like what the president is doing, simply pass the bill that we passed by a 2-to-1 majority in the U.S. Senate.
Senator, some people would argue, though, that a lack of action by the House on that bipartisan Senate bill doesn't necessarily give the president the authority to act on his own. They say this country has an immigration law in place, and the president can't overturn this law on his own. They say, hey, that's not the way democracy works.
He's not overturning it. He's deciding which parts will have to be enforced. We couldn't enforce it all anyway. Let's be realistic. If you have 11 million people in the country who do not have immigration status they would like, are we going to say, okay, tomorrow we'll deport 11 million people? We'd have a hard time deporting 11,000, say nothing about 11 million. It's like when I was a prosecutor in Chittenden County, we had a series of armed robberies. I could tell the police, okay, I want you to work on getting those armed robbers, or don't spend time on those armed robbers. We got people going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit on the interstate. Go out and check on them. Well, you have to use what you have and be sensible with it. The president has done really what he can do, nowhere near as much as he'd like to do. And every president's done this. None of these people objected when Republican presidents did this. Not a single one of them objected when Republican presidents did it. They only object when this president does it. The speaker knows that the immigration bill we passed in the Senate would pass the House. For 500 days, he's refused to bring it to a vote so that they can go and file suits against President Obama so they can all go on the Sunday talk shows and say, oh, it's terrible what President Obama's done. And when you ask them, well, what about the fact that President Reagan and President Bush did far more by executive orders, their answer is, oh, it's terrible what President Obama's doing. Come on. It's plain politics, and it is hurting the country. If we pass, even the most conservative economists say if we pass the bill that we pass in the Senate, we would boost our gross domestic product by $90 billion over 10 years. We'd raise the average wages for U.S.-born workers, and we'd cut the federal deficits by $25 billion. I mean, that's kind of a win-win situation.
Today in the program, our guest is Senator Patrick Leahy. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We're starting off by talking about the president's immigration reform package. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Or better yet, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You know, Senator Leahy, what some of the opponents of what the president is doing bring up is that some time ago, the president himself said that he didn't have the authority to put this kind of plan in place, but now he says he does. So are you persuaded that what he is doing is constitutional?
I'm persuaded by it, and I'm persuaded by the analysis of the OLC. What the president made very clear, there were things he wanted to do, and he doesn't have the authority to do them, and so he's not going to do them. He's had a very, very intensive for months analysis of what he has done by the nonpartisan Office of Legal Counsel, and they told him he can do it. What the president, though, has said very consistently, after the Senate passed with 68 senators, you know, we have a hard time getting 68 senators to say the sun rises in the east. But we had 68 senators, after hundreds of amendments, passed an immigration bill, Republicans and Democrats together. They know from when the press has done checks on this, it would pass the House representatives. And the Speaker refuses to take it up. If there's any criticism that should be levied here, it should be levied against a Republican Speaker of the House who refuses to take up an immigration bill. And the president's made it very clear, if they took it up and passed that, he wouldn't have to take any of these executive actions.
Now, some people are going to hear
And one of the reasons President Reagan and President Bush took these kind of executive actions is because in both those instances, the Congress failed to act.
Senator, some people are going to hear that and think, well, what you're saying is the ends justify the means.
No, of course I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we have a situation where we have to do something realistic about our immigration. We're not going to, even if we had all the military, all the police departments, everything else, do nothing but this, we're not going to deport 11 million people. We're not going to break up families when some members of the families are here perfectly legal, the others are not. We're not going to do that. We're not going to bring the economy to a halt in this country. What we're going to do is at least take what steps can be done in immigration. Everybody agrees that the situation with our immigration laws today, there's great lacking in it. People like Grover Norquist talk about the tens of billions of dollars, and he's a very conservative Republican economist. He talks about the tens of billions of dollars that would be that would come into the U.S. economy if we'd fix our immigration system. The Chamber of Commerce, which is a conservative, Republican-oriented National Chamber of Commerce, they support immigration reform. Everybody knows we have to. If the Congress is unwilling and unwilling to do anything, in this case, because of one person, the Republican leader in the House, they're not going to. I don't see how any president could fail to act. President Reagan was faced with that. He acted. President George H.W. Bush was faced with that. He acted. Not a single Republican's voice said anything about what they did. It's only when President Obama does it because they fail to act. I think the politics of this is patently obvious.
Let's turn to some of our listeners and start off with Joe in Burlington. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you doing?
Great.
Senator Leahy, I had a question for you. I know you're talking about things on a national level, but on a statewide level, does this affect any Vermont farm workers, particularly the H-2A migrant, April to December kind of workers?
No, and I wish it did, but unfortunately, the president feels he does not have the legal authority to do that. As you know, we have the dairy farmers and H-2A in the Senate bill, which passed. That was from an amendment that I put into the Senate bill. I got Republicans and Democrats to support it. Again, one of the reasons why I wish they would take it up and pass that bill in the House. I wish the Republican leadership would let them take it up, because that would be a huge boon. I mean, everywhere I go, as I go around Vermont, I make it a point to stop and visit farm families. I think I've learned as much sitting around the kitchen tables of farmers in Vermont as I do anywhere. And they all say, please fix this. Well, we had to fix it. And I'm as frustrated as they are. Unfortunately, the president does not have the authority to fix that.
Let's talk to Derek in Charlotte. Hi, Derek. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Senator Leahy. You helped my wife legally immigrate here from the UK in 2005. It was a great help. What about everyone who's legally immigrated here? It kind of feels like it was all for nothing if they could have just walked across the border and not pay anything. We paid thousands of dollars and had to go through everything, so she was never a draw in the system. And now we have everyone's going to be drawn system. Is how you feel with constituents that went through the legal immigration process?
Well, I would encourage constituents to go through the legal process. There's no question with her that a future president may change this back. She is here legally, and she does not have to worry. Somebody would just walk across the border now, they're not going to become citizens. And the president's made that very clear. And we are saying this is not what this situation is. Now, your wife did the right thing. I am glad that Susan Sussman and others helped. We're talking about three-year deferrals. No, if this was a member of my family, I would recommend they and urge that they do exactly what your wife did. It is the better way. Even if we pass the legislation I want, there will still be people have to take the steps your wife did.
Let's turn to Dan, who is calling today from Brattleboro. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Senator Leahy, I happen to be in agreement with the president's action on the immigration question, and I'm wondering why we don't hear more about the fact that, you know, it really appears to be a humanitarian crisis. A lot of the people that have come here should have refugee status, and, you know, why don't we hear more about that when talking about the due process that should be happening with the immigration question?
No, that's a good point, and many of us keep talking about that, but somehow that doesn't seem as exciting to a lot of the national news media as, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling in. Let's impeach the president. And frankly, it's frustrating. I mean, I did not criticize President Reagan when he did things like this. I did not criticize President Bush when he did. In fact, I supported him. And all the more reason why they should be supporting what the president's done. I spoke out about what you're talking about several times when the children who are coming to our border from Honduras and Guatemala, El Salvador, many of them were fleeing, their families would have them flee so they wouldn't be swept up in gangs, they wouldn't be shot. 12-year-old girls would not be sold into sexual slavery. And they came across our border looking for freedom. I thought there was a humanitarian reason why we should protect them.
So, Senator, some of the Republican leaders in Congress say they're going to respond to the president's plan in January. They'll have a majority in the Senate. They say they won't hold confirmation hearings for the president's attorney general nominee or for any of his judicial appointments. They plan to use budgetary action to block the implementation of the president's plan. Is it worth dealing with the issue of immigration in this way, the way the president has, if it's going to only make things worse in Washington?
I don't know how it could be much worse. I mean, as Republicans closed down the government a couple of times, that cost business people in Vermont huge amounts of money, as it did across the country. It cost the taxpayers billions upon billions of dollars when they closed down the government. And I suppose they could do that again to make their point. They come across as spoiled kids in that. Why not do what we did in the Senate, where we brought Republicans and Democrats together and pass a bill? I mean, what more do they need? They've had that bill sitting over there for 500 days, and they won't even vote up or down. It strikes me as they want to be able to politically say, well, here's what I'm for, or here's what I'm against, but I never have to vote on anything, so you can't really hold me to it. I've always felt that I was elected to vote. Vote yes or vote no. I've cast more votes than all but a half a dozen people in the history of this country. Are there someone I look back and say, maybe I should have voted this way or that way, or some unpopular? Sure, but at least I vote. That's what we're paid to do. That's what we're elected to do. But I will keep on working across the aisle on things. I think a lot of people think this brinkmanship is not helping their party. I worked with the Republican leader of the Senate, Republican Deputy Leader John Cornyn of Texas, this week already, and we passed a bipartisan Freedom of Information Act. John and I have teamed up with both Republican and Democratic administrations to pass the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. I've worked with Republicans to help them get judges that they recommend through the White House and through the Senate, just as I have with Democrats. I try in most of my legislation, just as I did with the provisions in the Farm Bill, to have both Republicans and Democrats come together. There are a lot more things we'll come together on than set us apart. Unfortunately, when we come together and do things, that doesn't seem to be newsworthy.
Let's take a call from Alexander in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hi, Alexander. Welcome to the program. Alexander, are you there?
Oh.
Hi there. What's on your mind today, Alexander?
I'm curious about how the introduction of all these work visas will start to affect the economy.
Are you feeling it might have a negative or a positive effect, Alexander?
Depends. It would do both. It would have a positive effect because it's a lot more workers in, a lot more money coming into the state. But at the same time, it also becomes a negative effect because most illegal immigrants don't have very good conditions, don't live in them. It's sad but true. And that increases a lot more expectations on, you know, what do we provide for them and help for them, which is a good thing, but it also puts a lot of stress with a lot of people.
Well, I disagree. They're here now, and if service is available, they're available now. It's some of these immigrants come in here. Let's see. There's the immigrants that started Google. That employs how many hundreds of thousands of people? Immigrants that started Intel. I mean, what is that? Let's stop and think about this. The fact is even the most conservative economists say that if we got this done, we'd boost our gross domestic product by $90 billion over 10 years. We'd raise the average wages of most people. You know, right now you have some who will say, okay, you're not legal, so I'm going to pay you well under minimum wage under the table. And so so another company gets undercut because they're obeying the law. They're paying people regular wages, and they in turn pay their taxes and so on. What we want is people get to be hired to pay taxes when they do, which they would have to do, and be productive members of the community. That we want them to obey the law. Only those people who are going to follow legal things in the community, legally be hired, legally pay taxes, legally be part of a community. Those are the ones that are going to be here. It's just like the high-tech companies have a number of people who've come here, gone to our colleges as immigrants. And you and I, because of the tax deferral and so on for colleges, we're paying part of that bill. They get degrees. They want to stay here. We tell them, no, you can't stay here. So they go back to their country. They help start companies or improve companies that then compete with U.S. companies. That's why most of our U.S. companies say, let them stay here. We'll hire them. We'll make U.S. more competitive. We'll create more jobs in the United States. Instead of educating people here in the U.S. and saying, but now you can't stay, go back to your country. Go work for a company that will compete against U.S. companies.
Today on the program, our guest is Senator Patrick Leahy. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to talk about Senator Leahy's efforts to place some restrictions on government surveillance programs. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Senator Patrick Leahy. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211 if you've got a question or a comment for the senator. Senator, let's look at your bill to place new restrictions on government surveillance programs. Came up in the Senate this week. There was a filibuster. It fell two votes short of achieving the 60 votes necessary to break that filibuster. The legislation would end the government's bulk collection of phone records. It would assign public advocates to review government requests for surveillance in front of the secret Foreign Intelligence Court. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell opposed the bill because he says it would greatly restrict the government's ability to track the activities of terrorist groups like ISIL. Here's what
he said. We live in a dangerous world. Threats like ISIL only make it more so. And at a moment when the United States is conducting a military campaign to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat ISIL, now is certainly not the time to be considering legislation that takes away the exact tools we need to combat ISIL.
So, Senator, what do you say to people like Senator McConnell who think that your bill will make it easier for terrorists to operate?
Well, of course, Senator McConnell used parliamentary efforts so there'd be no debate whatsoever. He didn't want to debate it. He wouldn't even answer the questions that I and others asked him. He refused to debate it at all. We got 58 votes. Normally, in a 100-member body, 51 votes would be enough to win something. But he did use a parliamentary device, to sort of thing he's always complained about, to stop any debate whatsoever. So we couldn't debate it. But let me talk about the ISIL thing. I mean, that is just doesn't even hold water. He's saying if we made the changes I've asked for, instead of leaving the law as it is now, we might face an ISIL. Well, ISIL came when we had the law the way it is now. We had spent $3 trillion to supposedly put Iraq on its feet. We've left hundreds of millions of dollars worth of U.S. equipment there. And what happened? We didn't even know ISIL was coming. Iraq didn't know they were coming. When they came, a lot of the Iraqi army that we had trained and supplied just ran away, leaving behind huge amounts of American weapons and American equipment, which ISIL just took. The law that we have now wouldn't have made any difference in that. But my response to that is, let's listen to our own national security director. General Clapper says this is an improvement and we should go with it. The Justice Department says that. Everybody from the ACLU on one side to the NRA, the National Rifle Association, on another side, say they're in favor of it. The fact is, and I'll tell you right now, when I go around Vermont, as I do all the time, I hear about this from everybody from across the political spectrum. And they say, why should our government be capturing everything I do, every phone call I make, every phone call my neighbors make? Why should we allow this kind of snooping on Americans? Why don't we target things to go after the really bad people? And I agree with them. I think when you saw the revelations after Edward Snowden, this is kind of out of control. And when NSA and others say, well, don't worry, we have tight controls over it, they didn't have tight enough controls to stop a subcontractor from walking out with all their files.
So, Senator, we have a very interesting situation. We have Senator McConnell saying this bill is much too restrictive and will help terrorists operate in this country. On the other side, we have Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who voted against bringing the bill up because he says the legislation is too weak. Has this legislation been watered down through this process?
No, actually, it's a good balance. I mean, we have people that go from the right, like Senator Lee of Utah, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, were co-sponsors, to people like Senator Schumer in New York State. What happened here, and I won't talk about Rand Paul, what he thinks he should do for his political or his presidential ambitions, although he has been criticized a great deal by some of the same people he wants for support for his vote. This should have been allowed to go forward. The House of Representatives had passed a bill somewhat similar but less far-reaching than ours. If we had passed this, they would have taken up ours. And, you know, we are always going to face threats. We face threats from the time we're an early nation, from the Barbary pirates right up to today. We're always going to face threats in the U.S. But I'll tell you what our biggest threat would be. If Americans said, well, let's just give up all our constitutional rights. Let's give up our search and seizure right. I mean, if you were told police officers could at will come to your house, just come in the door, whether you liked it or not, go through all your files and papers and everything, you say, wait a minute, we can't do this. We have a constitutional right to say no. Well, now that you have your files and your papers and everything stored electronically, there's still no reason why they should be allowed to do that. And I think if we reach a point in the United States that we're so afraid that we might have somewhere, someday, somebody in the world doesn't like us and might come after us, that we're willing to give up all our freedoms here, what do we stand for as a country? And I think that, you know, I'll keep on fighting for this. I think we make a mistake in saying that everything everybody does is going to be the property of the government.
Let's turn to Luke, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Luke. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Senator Leahy, I can't get into so many subjects. I just would like to throw in and say that I appreciate your integrity, and I also appreciate the iron integrity of President Obama, because I think the elephant in the room that nobody has mentioned, and if anybody would have, it would have been the president. The Congress has done nothing, and they have been broadcasting in the last 48 hours or so that they will do nothing. They're saying it out loud. We are not going to do anything for this guy because we want this. And the elephant in the room is bigotry and racism, and I cannot believe that it's not, but it's not being taken care of. So I appreciate your integrity for putting up with people like Dick Cheney and other people. And you are a tough guy to have that person do what he did to you, and you just walk on by. And I feel like Congress is doing that to President Obama, and I think he had a lot of good ideas about working bipartisanly. It seems to me he offered a lot of people to get together early in his administration, and people just turned him down. So you can only do what you can do when your folks aren't helping you. And I just appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that. You know, the president is a friend of mine. We were good friends when he was in the Senate. My wife was assigned to help his wife when they first came to the Senate, and we kept that friendship. I've raised some of these same issues you have with him. And he just says, well, we'll do what we can for the country. I don't think anybody should be surprised what Mitch McConnell is saying. After all, right after the president got elected, he said his, McConnell's, primary goal was to make sure the president failed. Well, if you want a president to fail, you're saying, I'll let the country fail for partisan reasons. I don't think it should be that way. I've worked with presidents in both parties. I've always tried to think what's best for the country. But for them to take a different position with this president when he takes executive actions, but it was perfectly okay when President Reagan or President Bush did, it kind of says where they are.
Senator Leahy, though, do you think that the Republicans who are opposed to the president's immigration reform package are opposing it, as Luke suggested, because there's an element of racism here, or is it a matter of they don't like the policy?
We had 68 senators voted for the policy in the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats. There was not a filibuster on that. They knew it was important to get it through. Even some who voted against it told me privately, of course, we got to move forward with this immigration law. When it got over to the House of Representatives, they knew there was enough votes to pass it, but the Tea Party types would not vote for it, which I think frightened the Speaker of the House, and they didn't bring it to a vote. I think that was a grave disservice to the country. I'm not going to say whether somebody has a racial bias or not, but I am saying I wish they had a bias for the country and would do things that would help the United States.
Today on the program, our guest is Senator Patrick Leahy. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about the Keystone Pipeline. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Senator Patrick Leahy, and our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Well, the Senate this week voted not to take up legislation authorizing the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. The measure failed by one vote. Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu urged members of the Senate to support this project, and here's what she said.
It will create jobs for America, not minimum wage jobs, but high-paying jobs for middle-class families. It is time for America to become energy independent, and that is impossible without the Keystone Pipeline and other pipelines like it that move our energy from where it is produced to where it is consumed.
Senator Leahy, you voted against the Keystone XL Pipeline project. Why?
Well, I voted against it, and I will continue to vote against it. Incidentally, again, to show you how politics have played, earlier this year, before the elections, when Democrats offered to bring Keystone Pipeline up for a vote, Mitch McConnell opposed bringing it up for a vote. Now that the election's over, wanted to bring it up for a vote. But I think it's the policy of the past with the pipeline. We can spend huge amounts of money, and it will, in the short term, create some jobs so that we can ship oil that comes from a rather dangerous way of collecting oil down to the Gulf Coast so it could be then put in ships and sent over to China and elsewhere. I don't see what that does to help the United States. I look at the last pipeline that it had a number of leaks, one of them in Kalamazoo, Michigan. They've spent over $1 billion to clean it up, and it still haven't repaired the damage. I think what we ought to do is be creating jobs. You want to create jobs and create jobs that save energy, create jobs in retrofitting buildings so they use less energy, create jobs that build alternative forms of energy. That is where the future of this country can be. We will never, ever be able to meet all the increasing demands by just drilling for more oil. We can meet increasing demands by finding alternative forms of energy, by finding things that are far more energy efficient, and doing it that way. That will create jobs and protect the environment. We want to do something that's going to create American jobs. Stop working on the crumbling infrastructure of this country, our bridges, our roads, our power grids, which many of which are susceptible to a terrorist hacking.
Senator, you know, it's interesting, this filibuster rule. So on one hand, when your bill came up to restrict government surveillance, the Republicans invoked the filibuster rule, and that bill fell two votes short of getting to 60. Now you look at the Keystone Pipeline, and here you had 59 senators who want to support the pipeline, so the filibuster rule kind of works in your favor. So doesn't it kind of depend on the issue as to whether or not the filibuster rule is a good or bad thing?
To some extent, yes, except that in the Keystone thing, this was done as such a blatant political move, and everybody saw it as that. He could have had that vote, and I would have agreed to have had that vote on Keystone this summer. And the Republican leader declined it, and then it's all for having it now because there's a runoff in Louisiana. I'm not going to play his kind of politics.
Let's turn to our callers and talk to Stephen in Stratford. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question. When we had the financial meltdown, the banks were loaned money at a half a percentage, and they turn around and they lend that money to our children for college at 6% and 7%. Why is my money being lent to kids for 6% or 7% so the banks can make 5% or 6% on it? That's my question.
I couldn't agree more, and I have worked with others who've tried. We've tried several times to change the amount that students have to pay to turn back their loans. But I'd also like to find a way to rein in these for-profit colleges who take kids, sign them up in their college, get them heavily in debt, which the for-profit colleges keep, even though they know if the kid graduates, the degree they're going to get from that college is worthless. And if the kid then drops out partway through, they don't care. That student is stuck with that debt until it's paid off. Many people, Senator Sanders, myself, and others have tried to get legislation through that would lower the amount they pay. But I also think that so many of these debts are owed to for-profit colleges, online colleges, colleges that are not going to give you a degree that's going to be worth anything. We have got to rein them in. It is wrong. The caller is absolutely right in the statement he made.
Senator, this week you praised the Justice Department for recovering a record $24 billion in fraud enforcement penalties from the financial institutions, including Citibank and J.P. Morgan, for their role in the mortgage crisis of 2008 that led to a major recession in this country. But these settlements have some critics. First of all, they say the settlements are closed documents. The companies never admitted to engaging in fraudulent activity. And since that's the case, no individual is being held accountable, and therefore nobody is going to jail. So to some people, that's not really justice, and there's no transparency in these settlements. How do you respond to those concerns?
Well, for one thing, I'd respond, we got $24 billion returned to the taxpayers that we did not have before we brought these suits. I would like to have more accountability. One of the reasons Republican Senator Grassley and I came together to support the Bipartisan Fighting Fraud to Protect Taxpayers Act was to get that. But let's not look at the glass as half empty. We have $24 billion returned to taxpayers that we did not have before. That is a good thing.
Don't you think it's kind of amazing, though, that nobody is going to jail?
All right. Listen, I'm a former prosecutor. I've always said that we should be sending some people to jail. And somehow that, when we've had, when we've gone after corporate fraud or corporate misaction and people have actually gone to jail, that's when all of a sudden everybody starts focusing, well, wait a minute, we better clean up our act. We saw this in the Bernard Madoff case.
We've got about a minute left, Senator. In January, you will be in the minority. You will no longer be chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. In just 30 or 40 seconds, can you tell us whether or not being in the minority for the next 2 years will affect your decision whether or not you're going to seek reelection in 2016?
No, it won't. I've been in the minority several times since I've been in the Senate. I've been the majority, and I've been in the minority. But I will still be the dean of the Senate on January 3rd. I'll be the dean of the Senate. I'll be the president pro tem emeritus, which gives me a number of things to do. And I'll keep right on doing building the bipartisan coalitions I did in the minority and the majority. For example, a lot of the things I did to get money to clean up Lake Champlain, I did in the minority. A number of the things I've done to bring $1 billion worth of jobs to Vermont, I did in the minority. So I'll keep on doing that.
We'll certainly be following many of these issues in the weeks and months ahead. Senator Patrick Leahy, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you. I enjoyed doing it. I'm looking forward to being up in Vermont in a few days.
That is Vermont Edition for today. Monday on the program, Vermont's junior U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders will be our guest. We'll continue the discussion of issues facing the U.S. Senate. And we'll look at the possibility that Sanders could run for president in 2016. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing. Production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.